It's possible for investors to understand intellectually that the status quo you're describing is bad and that the numbers are large, but sometimes they just don't feel it. Stories help dial up the feeling of pain and make it easier for other people to empathize with those facing it. The trick is to take a potential user and explain what doing their job without your product looks like. As you explain the status quo, your job is to emphasize the laborious, boring, repetitive, wasteful, absurd, and expensive nature of the problem you're fixing. Hello, and welcome to the Associated Podcast. Tunde here. As many of you may know, I run Pitch Doctor, a website packed with resources dedicated to helping founders get better at fundraising. For the first time, my two loves are combining. Over the next few weeks, we'll be sharing Fundraising 101 with you, a series guiding founders on how to successfully pitch VCs. Today, we're bringing you the first part of it. We'll cover what meetings are like, the four narratives you want investors to believe, and how to talk about your value proposition. Strap in. We're going to begin this guide by covering the basic features of meetings with investors. After this, we'll turn to the fun part, investors' goals. Let's kick off with meeting style. There are two styles of meeting, presentations and conversations. Presentations are way more common and give you more control, so we're going to focus on them in this series. When it's a presentation style meeting, you're basically given permission to pitch your startup, largely uninterrupted. After you finish speaking, investors will ask you questions about your business. When designing your presentation, it's really important to remember to leave time for questions, because unanswered questions lead to rejections. Speaking of managing time, let's talk about meeting length. VCs will typically schedule 30 minutes for the first pitch. However, they will without fail talk about themselves for the first 5 minutes of every call. As a result, the meaningful part of your first pitch will only be 25 minutes. But remember how I said it's important to leave time for investor questions? This means that in practice, you should plan to speak for 10 to 15 minutes and leave the rest of the time for Q&A. The third and most important thing to be aware of about first meetings with VCs is what their goals for the meeting are. A VC's main goal in a first meeting is to screen whether you are interesting enough to dive deeper. 30 minutes is not enough time to get the information needed to make an investment decision. So VCs use first meetings to qualify whether your startup is worth spending more energy on. They're looking at 20 startup submissions and they can't deep dive into every single one of them. As a result, they try to reject everything they deem irrelevant as soon as they possibly can. This means your goal in the first meeting is not to give a comprehensive overview of every aspect of your business. Your goal is to get investors excited enough to dive deeper, which means you need to use your 10 to 15 minutes really wisely. To do this successfully, you first need to know what VCs want. Only then can you design your pitch to perfectly match your audience's goals. So what do VCs want? Put simply, VCs want two things: billion-dollar outcomes and as little risk as possible. Knowing this, however, isn't that helpful on its own. What's more important when building your narrative is how they judge these two things. Whether you can get a billion-dollar outcome is judged using two factors. One, your value proposition. Investors ask themselves whether people actually get value from your product. And two, your market size. VCs look at whether, assuming people want what you're selling, enough of them will want it for it to be possible to build a billion-dollar business. Meanwhile, how risky your business looks is judged using one, your team. Investors ask themselves if your team looks capable of achieving the impossible. And two, your traction. There's nothing more convincing that something will work than the fact that it's already working. Because of this, the best pitches are carefully crafted to tell investors exactly what they want to hear about these four areas. Your job as a founder is to use the 10 to 15 minutes you have to convey the following four narratives about each of these areas. On value proposition, the ideal message is, customers get a ton of value from our product. On traction, it should be, we're great at getting customers, and the ones we get love us. On market, it's, our market can sustain a billion-dollar outcome. And on team, it's, our team are the best people in the world to do this impossible thing. My advice to anyone pitching is to think about your pitch in terms of these narratives rather than focusing on slides. There are three reasons for this. One, it forces you to focus on how to get the investor to believe your message rather than just filling out some stupid template made for a different business. Two, it forces you to think about what you're going to say in the meeting rather than slide design. And three, when it comes to slides, sometimes you need more than one slide to get a message across effectively. Filling in a template won't help you figure that out. My advice to founders preparing to talk to VCs is always to start from a Word document and craft your storyboard based on these four narratives. before you ever touch PowerPoint, G Slide, or Pitch. In general, the order of these four narratives doesn't matter much, apart from one exception. Your value proposition typically needs to go first or second. This is because if VCs don't know what you do within the first 5 minutes of a meeting, you run the risk of losing their attention. In the rest of this series, I'm going to go through each of these four narratives and show you how to get VCs to believe them. We're going to finish off with the first of them. Narrative one, customers get a ton of value from our product. Showing VCs that customers get a ton of value is easier said than done. Typically, people do it by starting with a problem that customers face and then claiming that their product is the solution. This is not the only solution, but it is often very effective. Setting up the problem well makes the value provided by your startup seem more striking. If the problem feels painful enough, it will seem like a no-brainer that people will be motivated to buy or use it. One thing to note before we proceed is that this approach is not always relevant. Take Facebook as an example. What problem did it solve? If your product doesn't solve a real problem, do not force it. Investors will see through it. In any case, I'll run through the problem-solution approach as it's relevant 90%+ of the time. Moreover, even if you don't have a problem to frame your product against, how you frame your solution, i.e. where you talk about what you do and the value it provides, doesn't change very much. The only difference is that you don't get to use the mirroring technique I'm going to discuss soon. When setting out your problems, here are the most important things to remember to make them pop. And by pop, I mean seem painful to the VCs listening. You want your problems to seem painful, as VCs believe that pain equals customer motivation. First off, your problem needs to be clear. By this, I mean it needs to be free of both jargon and marketing speak. A jargon-filled problem sounds something like this. Our customers can't solve a traveling salesman problem without zero-knowledge proof. Nobody outside your industry understands what on earth that means. I don't even understand it, and I wrote it. While marketing speak sounds something like this. No customer platform in the industry lets people put AI to work. Like, what does it mean? This is the type of crap you find on enterprise software websites. The person you want money from will leave the call or meeting with zero idea of what the problem is, and therefore zero idea why anyone would be motivated to buy your product to solve it. And even worse for you, zero interest in giving you money. Set out your problem in clear English. Secondly, the problems you describe should be framed from your customer's perspective. The whole point of talking about problems is to convince investors that customers want to buy your product. Therefore, you need to make sure that the problems you describe are actually focused on the buyers. Take this example problem statement. Climate change is really bad. 99% of VCs will agree with you, but it's not a problem that will help convince them to invest in your thing. It contains no information about what's motivating anybody to buy or use your product. You could say something far more convincing like, Fortune 500 companies get fined if they don't report on the carbon footprint of their supply chains, and they have no tools to help them do it. Why is this so much better? Because it's specific to your customers. It identifies who the entities or people buying your product are, and it shows how they suffer without it. This makes it easy to see how the pain described might motivate them to buy something. Thirdly, make sure to quantify the pain your customers face. Use numbers so people can get a sense for how much your customers suffer without your product. It's not enough to say that something is inefficient. How much time and money do the people suffering from their inefficiency lose as a result of it? When it comes to selecting what numbers to use, prioritize the following. 1. Numbers that pertain to time and money. And 2. Numbers that aren't abstract. By this, I mean that it's way more compelling to say that $40,000 are wasted by the average firm each year than it is to say that 2% of the budget is wasted. The latter can make it harder for investors to put a finger on how much is being lost. Another tip is to use stories to make problems more vivid. While numbers are great, problems can often feel abstract, especially for industry outsiders. It's possible for investors to understand intellectually that the status quo you're describing is bad and that the numbers are large, but sometimes they just don't feel it. Stories help dial up the feeling of pain and make it easier for other people to empathize with those facing it. The trick is to take a potential user and explain what doing their job without your product looks like. As you explain the status quo, your job is to emphasize the laborious, boring, repetitive, wasteful, absurd, and expensive nature of the problem you're fixing. You're trying to create a picture where the VC thinks of themselves. I would hate to do that. Bonus points if the example user is you. Compare the following two descriptions. Which feels more painful? This one, the admin and data entry around our clinical trial is extremely manual. This leads to delays and failures, which causes $5 million in unnecessary cost per trial. Or this one, the admin and data entry around clinical trials is extremely manual. In one clinical trial I worked on, we had a PhD researcher spend an entire month manually transposing data from pen and paper into a system of record. This type of manual work delayed our research by 3 months. The cost of these types of delays and failures on the whole industry is around $5 million per trial. Lastly, you need to prioritize. Counterintuitively, if you claim there are 20 problems, it is generally far less compelling than talking about the two or three worst ones. With two or three problems, it's typically possible to make them feel really painful. With 20 problems, people's eyes start to glaze over. And pain is what makes investors believe that people will buy your stuff. So be ruthless. Limit yourself to a maximum of 3 fleshed out problems. Now we know how to talk about problems, let's look at how we make your solution sound like something people will actually buy. When it comes to your solution, the first and most important thing to do is to explain what your product does succinctly. In general, there are two ways of doing this. You can either do it by analogy, i.e. we are Uber for helicopters, or by what I call an X for Y description. Analogy works well, but comes with two risks. The first risk is that an imperfect analogy might end up confusing investors about what you do. The second is that you might be associating yourself with a company that investors are not excited about. Investors might simply not know the company you're comparing yourself to, or they might actively think it's a bad business. So be careful. X for Y descriptions, on the other hand, are the safest way to explain what your product does. X represents what your company makes, while Y represents who you make it for. Here's an example. Pitch Doctor provides an AI tool that analyzes founders' calls with investors and gives those founders instant feedback on how they went. When doing an X for Y description, the points mentioned about avoiding marketing speak and jargon remain extremely important. Clarity is king. Now that you've explained what you do, explain how it solves the problems you just set out. As a rule, your solution should mirror the problems you just spent time making seem really painful. If you spend time establishing that paperwork was making doctors unbelievably happy and costing their employers $40,000 per year, then now is the time to show that your solution eliminates all paperwork. When talking about the benefits your solution provides, make sure to quantify them. In the same way that framing things in terms of time and money helps to make problems sound painful, talking in terms of time and money makes the benefits of your solution sound compelling. And the bigger the benefit seems, the more investors will be prepared to believe that customers will pay for it. Lastly, use stories to make your solution sound more compelling. Like with problems, stories help make benefits feel more concrete. So tell a story of how users' lives change once they have your product to make the benefits hit home properly. When done correctly, it should feel as though any person with the problem your product solves would instantly switch if they are at all rational. So far, we've gone through quite a bit of theory. Theory is useful, but pitching is so nuanced that it's difficult to know what to really do and how you actually come across without seeing real pitches. If you want to get funded, you need to have a nuanced understanding of what's happening in your meetings and how to respond. And the best way to get this type of understanding is to see tons of other people pitching. That's why XVCs are so bloody good at raising money. At Pitch Doctor, I've created a product that gets you great at pitching fast. We've put together tons of recordings of founders pitching real VCs, and each recording is packed with my commentary containing lessons you can apply to your own meetings, letting you move beyond theory into a successful fundraise. Rated over 4 stars by more than 50 founders just like you. You can try it for free at pitchdoctor.app/masterclass, link in the description. Anyway, we're going to stop here. The next part of this series will cover how to present your traction. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss it. Do this at theassociatedcollective.substack.com to make sure you never miss any of our content, whether it's a blog, a podcast, or something else.